All-star fans, all-star content. Fan-sided radio.
Burgers, check. Brats, check. Beer, check. Cooler, check. Chairs, check. There's only one thing left to do before game day. Saban's boys look poised at another run for a BCS national championship. This is the Bama Hammer Tailgate Show. Roll Tide Roll.
And welcome to the Bama Hammer Tailgate Show here for Bowl Week here. Here on the Bama Hammer Tailgate Show once again. Another week of the season has concluded, and another season itself has concluded. You had the championship week last week. We'll go over the SEC championship game for you real quick, and we'll preview the national championship game between Alabama and Notre Dame. We'll also talk to you about the BCS bowls, the other bowls going on, as well as the SEC bowls that is going on. So we got tons to talk about on the show today. Despite it being the end of the season, there's still tons of things we got to talk about, Brett. And once again, thank you for joining me this next to last week here of the of our show for this season. And it's been a fun season so far, and you know, bowl season shows that we may have a couple other things that we may have to show before everything's said and done for sure. Let's start out and let's talk about this championship game. Go the SEC championship game in Atlanta, Alabama and Georgia. Supposed to be a very close game, four quarters. Everybody was putting that on the line. All the game day guys that were there at the college game day on ESPN, they all picked Alabama to win this game. You know, Kirk Herbstreit, his you know, said that it was going to be about three and a half quarter game to wear a thing. It turned out to be a full four quarters. And Alabama, you know, winning their 23rd SEC championship and its second in 4 years. And you've got to admire that about this team. But you've also got to give credit to Georgia where credit's due. That was a fantastic game to watch. Probably one of the best, in my opinion. Where does it rank to you? Let's start out with just SEC championship games. Where does it rank in terms of SEC championship games is to you based on what you've seen before?
This one was probably two or three. I'd say it was probably two behind the first SEC championship game against when Alabama met Florida and supposedly the play that changed college football occurred. This game was just such a back and forth, knockdown, drag out battle of an affair that it's something that the typical SEC football fan will love to watch over and over and over again. Obviously, Georgia fans are going to kind of throw this one to the wayside, delete this one off the DVR, and try to move on with their lives. But Alabama fans, probably not Auburn fans either, or most other SEC fans, will want to watch this one over and over and over again. A phenomenal game all the way around, one that a lot of people thought was over, including myself, when Georgia blocked Cade Foster's field goal and took it to the end zone. I thought the game was over right then, and Alabama just fought back and fought back and fought back and played solid Alabama football in the fourth quarter to win this one, and that's what SEC fans love watching.
I agree, although I will disagree, though. I think it was my number one out of them, and here's why, because this game had so much stake going in. You had national title hopes. You had number two versus number three, and that's you know, that's huge, and I loved this game, everything about it. The times when I was up and when Alabama was up and it was a big game to where, you know, Georgia was up, and it was very interesting to watch. There was not a moment of this game I did not want to miss. Even the Cincinnati Alabama game, I didn't even pay attention to that game. The first quarter itself was interesting. This game was number one on my pick in terms of the SEC championship game. But in terms of, you know, games overall that you've seen, where would you put that? I mean, there's another question. You know, to me, that ranks just behind the Tennessee game in 2009. The feeling was a lot more in the Tennessee game because it was just such a everything was at stake. Alabama's national championship was at stake in that game, and it came on a Terrence Cody blocked field goal. But this one ranks right behind that one.
Well, to me, endings are different from games being great. That game was not a very well-played game on many, many levels, whereas this one was a great-played game by both sides for the most part. Of course, in a football game, you're going to have some lulls and some hot streaks, but for the most part, the football was of high quality and it had a phenomenal ending, as we all know. See, one of the games that sticks out in my mind, the last time a game had both a huge stage to be played on, unlike the Alabama-Tennessee game until probably 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter when people realized, well, wait a minute, Alabama could lose. So the last time I saw a game have a stage like this, a phenomenal game played on both sides and a great ending, to me, you probably got to go back to when Texas and USC met each other in the national championship game and Vince Young scampered into the corner of the end zone to give the Longhorns that national championship. You got to go all the way back there. For me, I think that game was played in 2005, to end the 2005 championships, you got to go all the way back there to find a game better than this one on those three levels. The stage, the phenomenal play, and the ending, obviously.
What a flip-flopper game. You know, you had Georgia, you know, this team that has risen from where they were before. I expected at some point, you know, a major brain fart by the Georgia coaching staff and Mark Richt, but I didn't see one. They coached a pretty phenomenal game, and their team executed very well. You know, it was just such a back and forth game that you really couldn't tell, you know, who was going to win until the seconds went zero, even in that one play. You know, where Georgia tossed it at the last play of the season, and it just grabbed it, and he fell 5 yards short of the end zone. You didn't really want to celebrate until the clock hit zero. It's like, is that it? Are we sure that's it?
Well, see, that I disagree. I think there was one mistake on the Georgia coaching staff, really? And that was not spiking the ball.
Well, that's true.
At the end of the game, I thought when Georgia
you could have done that a lot better. You could have gone either way for me on that one.
See, I disagree. When you get that close, you have no timeouts, and you're not Texas A&M, okay? You're not Oregon. You aren't used to running your offense at that pace. And let's be honest, folks, they were driving. They were driving like nobody's business in that game ending drive. That ended up not being a game winner. I think you got to spike the ball right there because I'm sitting in the Georgia Dome. I'm expecting them to spike the ball. I've actually got my head down looking at something else at this point in time, and I look up, and Aaron Murray's got the ball by his helmet, drops back looking for a pass, and I'm thinking, what is going on right now? That should be a spike every single time. You could have stopped the clock with probably 11 seconds or so. You could have run two plays in that time, but instead you got one and a bad play call at that. Yeah. I just didn't like that decision at all.
But you can also say that Nick Saban and Alabama made a big coaching error at the end of the second half, at the end of the first half, not using their timeouts at all in that one. And that's what really, I mean, if they had scored that, it would have been a much less stressful game, I think, if they had done that. But it was a pure coaching error at half. After the half, the Tracy Wolfson from CBS Sports interviewed him and said that Nick Saban said that was his fault. And you know, that's just something you have in these games when you have these high pressure, intense games. You know, even as Nick Saban's glorified as the high exalted one of coaching, you know, even he tends to make some mistakes, and that's how college football works. It's not just a execution game by the players. It's not just an emotional game. It's all part of it's also coaching. That's typically how it works. But what do you think was the key to Alabama's victory in this one? What was one thing that kind of stood out that you think really kind of nailed the victory for Alabama in this one?
I thought it was how they eventually finally committed to the run game late in a close football game. I was talking to a friend of mine after the game, and I agree with him. He said it was like at halftime, Coach Saban and Coach Nussmeier got together, and Nussmeier finally realized,
I have an all-world offensive line. I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
That is exactly what must have happened in the locker room, because there was a drive in the third and fourth quarter where Eddie Lacy got the ball on a handoff five straight times. It was like Mike Gillisley at Florida or something. It's as if they were playing a cornerback behind center and they had to run the football. It was just down the throat, down the throat, down the throat, and Georgia had no dream of stopping that because they were so dedicated to pass rushing, which they did very well. To their credit, the dedication to the run game at the end of the game was incredible.
And first time two teammates on the same team in the SEC championship game rushed for over 100 yards. Both Eddie Lacy and T.J. Yeldon had a good amount of yards. I think Lacy finished off with about 181 and T.J. Yeldon, I think, with about 157 or so. But a very solid running game for Alabama. I have to fully agree on that. That is basically what won this game for Alabama, is the success of the running game. I think this is probably the best success they've had in the running game all year. And it's kind of strange to see that, because, you know, with Georgia's defense, it was a pretty solid defense to coming into this game. And they just couldn't seem to find an answer for T.J. Yeldon. And, you know, also I want to say, give all the credit to Barrett Jones. You know, he really had to take down two people on that defensive line that were roughly 300 pounds each. And he played really well. Early he was a little bit struggling, but as the game progressed on, it seemed like he got a foothold of himself, and he was able to wear out those defensive linemen to a point where it was easy for him to defend them. But give Barrett Jones all the credit in this one. He was a very key player on that offensive line.
And I think a part of that dominance we saw was because he was able to get in a rhythm. He was able to run the ball a little bit. And offensive linemen love run blocking. They can really dominate their guy in the run block. And when he saw his guy go down to the ground a few times on the run block, he got some confidence. He realized, you know what, I can play at this level with this hurt foot. And he dominated from that point forward. Like you said, a phenomenal performance from Barrett Jones. DJ Fluker as well did great on the edge. I thought both DJ Fluker and Cyrus Kwanjo did a phenomenal job in this game, because the Alabama running backs had no problems sneaking out to the edge and busting runs for much, much more yards than it would have been if they just hit the hole in between the guard and the center.
Fantastic game by both teams for sure. But I just want to talk about it. And I know we've, you know, people have rehashed this multiple times, but you talk about Georgia. I mean, again, they played a heck of a game, and they played very well. And Nick Saban even said that they played very well. But it is purely unfair. It's purely unfair for this team, for Georgia, as much as they performed well against Alabama. Probably with the exception of Texas A&M, the best that a team has played against Alabama all season. And you've got to give credit where credit's due, but unfortunately the BCS does not see it that way. And the Georgia's not going to be going to a BCS bowl. They're not going to be able to prove themselves on the big stage. Instead, Florida, a team who did not win even play in the SEC championship or even win their division, is playing in the Sugar Bowl against. And that's just, honestly, to me, purely unfair to them. But that's the way the system works, unfortunately.
See, I don't think it's unfair to Florida, because Florida is a very, very good football team. There, as we know, including the national championship game, there are 10 teams that play in BCS bowls, and you cannot tell me there are 10 teams in the country better than Florida. At the same time, you cannot tell me there are 5 teams in the country better than Georgia. I think Georgia got shafted here. It's just ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
Very much so. And we'll get into the BCS in just a minute, because that's going to be a very tense discussion, I'm sure. But let's kind of move forward and kind of look at Alabama things. No matter what the result, the winner of that game was going to the BCS National Championship game, and Alabama ended up coming up top. They're going to get to face the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the BCS National Championship game in Miami, Florida, in the Orange Bowl. And this is a very much a big anticipated game. When this game started, you know, coming out, there's like, oh, Notre Dame and Alabama could play each other. That could be a big game. And now it's come to fruition. These two teams, two traditional powerhouses, they do have a sort of a history together. And this is a game that a lot of pundits in the college football world are looking forward to watching. And this is a big game for both teams. But a lot of the odds makers don't favor Notre Dame in this game, which is odd enough because Alabama's number two in these polls versus number one. It's kind of odd to see a number two team, but it's the SEC. Kind of odd to see a number two team over number one, though. But do the Fighting Irish, do you think they have a good chance of upsetting the big mighty SEC and upsetting and preventing that seventh straight national title? I mean, that's a big question.
No. I just don't see it, because the offense for Notre Dame has been so bad on so many levels. I mean, their average for the season is probably higher than it should be, because they put up 50 on Navy. They had three overtimes against Pittsburgh. There's a lot of time that Notre Dame had that Alabama did not. And I just don't see Notre Dame's offense being able to do well against an Alabama defense that has big guys faster than most of your players on the field. Because the thing that with the defenses Notre Dame faces year in, year out, either they're fast enough to contain you, but they're not big enough to bring you down on the outside, or they're big enough to bring you down, they just can't catch up with you. At Alabama, they've got both. They've got talent like Adrian Hubbard, who's a huge guy and fast enough to run you down if he needs to. The same for Xavier Dixon, C.J. Mosley. This is a beast that Notre Dame has never seen before, since they've been scared out of their pants to schedule a legitimate SEC team for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't think that Notre Dame can hang with them. And somewhere deep inside of them, I think they know it, since they haven't been scheduling SEC teams for the last 10 years.
That's true. But I think maybe out of the last few teams that have been able to play the SEC in the BCS National Championship game, I think Notre Dame really has the best shot out of all of those teams. I mean, you look at other teams that Alabama's faced in previous years. Of course, they faced LSU last year, but they're an SEC team. You really can discount that a little bit. Back in 2010, you're talking about Auburn and Oregon. You know, Auburn was a pretty big powerhouse. A lot of people favored Auburn in that game. Then you had Alabama and Texas. That was kind of a question mark game, but if Colt McCoy had, you know, we always say discount the whole Colt McCoy thing with him getting injured, but I think out of all these teams lately that have faced SEC teams in the BCS National Championship game, I think Notre Dame probably has the best shot of doing it, just because of they've had struggles this season, yes, but they've shown that this team is much more experienced and much more resilient when it comes to playing college football games. I mean, yeah, they struggled against 4-4 Pitt. Big deal. They struggled against BYU. But this team's a pretty solid team. Let's not discount that. I mean, going 12-0 in a season, especially in a season of independence when you're facing top teams probably week in, week out as an independent, that's a pretty solid season. And I you can't discount the body of work that Notre Dame's had.
See, I wish the playoff was this year. Because I want to see Oregon Notre Dame. I think that game to me would define who should play Alabama in the national championship game. I think Oregon and Notre Dame need to play each other at some point to decide who really earns the right to play in the national championship game. I think Alabama and Georgia should have been the de facto semifinal in the national and the SEC championship game, which we got. Alabama won. I wish Notre Dame and Oregon could play each other to somehow decide who would meet Alabama in Miami. But you know what? I don't get everything I want, unfortunately.
Notre Dame, and just a note, Notre Dame got an anonymous donation from a donor, and now, you know, certain students that are going to the BCS National Championship game will get discounted tickets. They're getting 150 off, half off the entire ticket. So, I mean, this is a big game. This is a fun game. Everybody's going to want to watch this one, unless you've just hated the SEC being the BCS National Championship game for the past 6 years, which might be practically half the nation. But it's a traditional game, and it's a fun game to watch. I think this game's going to be a lot better than a lot of people think, especially, you know, now that we know Alabama this year, not exactly the up to par caliber that you experience, but it's going to be a fun game. Once again, January 7th is going to be an awesome day, especially if you're an Alabama or Notre Dame fan. It's going to be a fun game. I can't dispute that at all. Let's talk about the BCS. The BCS comes out. They reveal the BCS Bulls, and something interesting happens in this one. The It's in the let me reference the rule real quick that's put in play here. It's in the under automatic qualifications, rule 3, section B. If a team that is in the top 16 is a conference champion of one of the non-BCS conferences, so the MAC, Conference USA, Sun Belt, all that, if they're in the top 16 and they are ahead of a automatic qualifying team, who is the conference champion of an automatic qualifying conference, then that team is automatically gets a spot in the BCS. This has been one rule that has kept Boise State in the BCS because if they finish in the top 12, it's a subsection of that rule. Top 12, if you're a non-BCS team, then you automatically get into a BCS bowl. But now you've got NIU, Northern Illinois, first bid for the Mid-American Conference in the BCS. They're going to the Orange Bowl to face on Florida State. Then you got the Sugar Bowl between Florida, who wasn't even a conference champion or a division champion, going on against Louisville. And then you've got the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl with a 5-loss Wisconsin team taking on a 11-1 Stanford team. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is madness in the BCS.
Well, see, if I'm not mistaken, you also have to beat a team from a BCS conference to be into a BCS bowl, which Northern Illinois did in. Oh, by the way, Iowa. Okay, Iowa is awful this year. And to address Northern Illinois before the Wisconsin thing, which I have a different opinion on than most, teaser there. But the Northern Illinois thing, it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. There are so many teams out there that are better than Northern Illinois. And you can say, well, you know what, that might be the case for every non-BCS qualifier. But you know what, that Cincinnati team that got destroyed by Florida in 2009, maybe, that Cincinnati team was pretty good. They might have beaten some high-caliber qualifying, BCS qualifying teams.
But they were in the Big East, though. They're an automatic qualifier conference. So
that's fair. But at the same time, go back to Boise State, Oklahoma. When they upset Oklahoma, that Boise State team was pretty good also. The Hawaii team that got destroyed by Georgia was also so-so. But this Northern Illinois team, no. They're just bad.
Yeah.
They're just bad.
And it just pains me because teams like Georgia are not getting in this one. There's teams, of course, they can't because there's two SEC teams in the BCS.
And let's talk about that rule for a second. Yeah. That's the most ridiculous rule ever. I thought this was America. Yeah. This is capitalism.
Freedom!
This is the capitalist capital of the planet, okay? We are all in favor. We founded a nation on the hardest workers getting what they deserve, which is the best. And instead, Georgia, who wins in the SEC just barely, thanks to their offensive coordinator most likely, loses to what will probably end up being the best team in the country. They had to go to the Capital One Bowl. What is wrong with this country? I quit.
Pull up the national anthem music on the background of that. It was very patriotic.
Oh, this is BS in my opinion. I'm sorry. That's just ridiculous, okay? Let's look at all the teams in BCS bowls that Georgia can beat. They can beat Florida State. They can definitely beat Northern Illinois. They could beat Northern Illinois by 40 if they really wanted to.
Well, here's the thing. Part of it is to blame the system. You can blame the system. And an article's up on Bama Hammer. I've debated about this. The reason we have these bad BCS bowls, you really can't blame the system because the system's inherently bad. And plus, this system's going away in 2 years. There's no need to get mad at it at a point where it's going to just start. You know, it's going to implode in 2 years. There's no point in getting mad at it. You place the blame on two conferences, the Big Ten and the Big East. The Big Ten had a awful year this year, and all capped up into a Big Ten championship game where a 5-loss Wisconsin team got into the Big Ten championship game because Ohio State and Penn State, the top two teams in that division, don't get in because they are bowl ineligible. And that's how they get in. And then they get the opportunity to take on 12th-ranked Nebraska, which has been waffling at best, and they destroy them.
And that just caps off the greatness that is the Big Ten season. Oh, it was ridiculous. And don't even get me started on the Big East.
No, the Big East. Let's just take the conference, put it in a barrel, and set it on fire.
Yeah,
ablaze.
But Louisville and Rutgers were headed into Week 14 in a top 25 matchup. They had to get through Week 13, though. They both lost that week. It would have been an epic matchup, and they would have been ahead of NIU in the BCS standings had they won those Week 13 games. One of them would have been ahead of them, and it's just honestly ridiculous how these two conferences just absolutely imploded and allowed something some team like NIU. And all credit to NIU, 11-1 in a MAC in a conference, no matter even if it's a Mid-America conference, is not bad. But that's just honestly no excuse. As premier, especially as premier as the Big Ten is, I mean, it's honestly ridiculous for a team like that to have that much trouble. And Ohio State would be in it, and they would have won that game against Nebraska had they not been bowl eligible. And that's just honestly unacceptable.
And to get in one more pot shot at the Big East while I can, that Rutgers-Louisville matchup that was talked up so much that could have been one of the biggest games in Big East history, neither of those schools are going to be in the conference 2 or 3 years from now. What does that tell you? The best teams want out of the Big East. Destroy the Big East. Let's make the ACC and the Big East one conference, okay? And then let's start over. Let's take the Clemsons and the Florida States of the ACC, maybe even Virginia Tech if they can right their ship. Let's get what's left of the Big East, if there's anything good in the Big East right now. I don't even know what the Big East is, since apparently Boise State and San Diego State are in the East now. What? Combine them and then start over from there. But you know what? That's a completely different debate. I hate you, Big East. I hate you. I hate you.
But let's look at the positive of this, though. You got the Fiesta Bowl. That's a big game. You got Kansas State, a team that they faltered in one game, but they're a very solid team with Colin Klein, a Heisman Trophy finalist in this one. And then you got Oregon, a team that, you know, is very high-powered offense. Two high-powered offenses. You can expect probably at least 40 points by both teams at least. So that'll be a fun game. And then you got the BCS Championship game. I mean, you got those two games. But three out of the 4 or 5 bowl games, honestly, complete crap. And that's sad. That's sad how the BCS has to go out like that. One more year of this system. Just hold on with us, folks. We'll be out of it in no time.
I can't wait for money to talk. For these two bowls. Yeah, I cannot wait to see the ratings comparison for the Oregon Bowl to the Northern Illinois game. I cannot wait.
It'll probably be night and day.
I cannot wait to see the ratings on those games and see money talk.
It's not Orange Bowl's fault, by the way. They were the last team to pick.
No, they were required to take.
If Northern Illinois didn't get in, and they would have picked Louisville, you know, but, you know, Sugar Bowl didn't want Louisville, so they didn't want Northern Illinois, so they picked Louisville. I mean, that was the only team they could pick. So they just get the short end of the stick on that one. Let's talk about the coaching carousel real quick. And we're getting some interesting news as we record on this Tuesday. We can't really confirm much about the Auburn situation just yet, but we can say something about the Arkansas situation and a shock of a hire that's just absolutely big. Brett Bielema from Wisconsin is leaving the program to become the head coach at Arkansas. And no details as of this recording have been issued as far as contracts or how much they're offering him. But the news is expected on Wednesday, and it's going to be huge for Arkansas. That's a huge hire. But kind of out of left field if you're a media member. You're just like, you did not see that coming. And this, you know, all this is coming from Pat Forty, who's, you know, a Yahoo writer, and he's known to scoop a lot, but that's a huge scoop for him. But man, Brett Bielema to Wisconsin. I mean, who saw that coming? Who saw that coming?
I know I didn't. I'm curious to see if this works, because Brett Bielema is one of those Big Ten guys that loves the gentleman's agreement, where recruiting is not as cutthroat as it is in the SEC. Although Urban Meyer is starting to
stomp on that.
Yeah, starting to say, "Hey, screw that tradition thing. We're playing college football here." I think it's interesting to see how well He does, because I'm telling you right now, Alabama's got a pretty good commit in Arkansas, in the state of Arkansas right now, running back All-T Tenpenny. If you know anything about Brett Bielema, he loves to run the football. Let's see how long this gentleman's agreement lasts. If I were him, the first phone call I'm making when I get to Fayetteville is to All-T Tenpenny, but then again, we'll have to see how Brett Bielema goes about coaching in the SEC. It's going to be a lot of fun, though, to see that program change from, say, 2010 or 2011, and I tweeted this, too, when it was the best spread attack south of West Virginia. And now in 2013, 2014, Arkansas is going to be pounding the ball in your face, down your throat, like Stanford's offense, just anvil on the face, followed by another anvil on the face,
yeah, exactly.
Just over and over again.
Entirely different system when you're hiring Brett Bielema. Very much a run heavy offense, but you know, I say that he may not have, you know, his first year, there may be some adjustments needed to get adjusted to the new system, but there's a lot of talent at Arkansas. There is a ton of talent still on that team, and I think maybe you could make it work. You could do like Hugh Freeze and have a more than better than expected successful season. Come out with a bowl next year. If you hire Brett Bielema, that's a pretty solid hire. And you know, after that, you know, once you get some of your recruits in, I mean, this team's going to be very much a power force in the SEC West. It came out of left field, but it's a very good hire. I'm just curious as to how much he was offered. He's got to be offered at least $3 million to leave Wisconsin, I would have to think, especially as tradition-rich and as storied as the Wisconsin program is. That's a big loss for Wisconsin to lose Brett Bielema. I think that's even shocking them at this point.
And by the way, something I saw on Twitter when it exploded after the news of Brett Bielema going to Arkansas. It seems like Jeff Long learned his lesson and hired a newlywed. Mm. That just happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twitter can be so weird sometimes.
Go Twitter, though. Go Twitter, for real.
Oh goodness, man! That's why we love Twitter.
Was that too soon? Too soon for anybody?
Just a tad.
Fair enough. Fair
just
enough.
A tad. Oh goodness gracious! that was pretty good though. But also Auburn, you know, and you know, there's nothing out there. I mean, there's nothing out there right now that's just outright confirmed for Auburn right now, but. There's two coaches basically that they could really go towards is Gus Malzahn, you know, their former offensive coordinator who was a fantastic offensive coordinator for Auburn, who left literally a year ago to coach at Arkansas State, and then you've got Kirby Smart of Alabama, which is, you know, of course there's that rivalry thing you've got to think about, but Kirby Smart, you know, he's been wanting to take a head coaching job so long, and an SEC coaching job. In Auburn, in a team that might have a lot of talent still, it's a pretty good job, I think. You know, you're still looming at the point of NCAA investigations, but it's interesting to see where Auburn will go with this. I don't know who they might hire. It might be a really good hire to fire Gus Malzahn. He's coached at Auburn before, but. Same time, Kirby Smart's a pretty good guy, and he's a pretty solid offensive coordinator. He could be a pretty solid coach, too.
As we're recording here on Tuesday afternoon, it looks like Gus Malzahn will be introduced in the next 24 hours. So it looks like he'll be the guy returning to Auburn to take over the head coaching job this time. And for those of you who are living in Tuscaloosa, and again, kind of a quick hat tip to the Twitter here, for those of you who live in Tuscaloosa and are hearing some strange noises, that's the Alabama coaching staff screaming in anguish about facing facing Gus Malzahn's incredible offense again.
I don't know what's worse. Either way they go, it would be a very bad, very spell trouble for Alabama.
I'd love to talk to a 70 years or older SEC fan right now who's got the Texas A&M offense to watch, having it beaten Alabama this year. Then Gus Malzahn coming back. Missouri runs that spread. Arkansas used to, obviously not anymore. Tennessee could very well adjust to the spread with their head coach, as could Kentucky. Who knows what's going to happen, but I just love to see what an SEC-style fan gets a thought of, especially when Alabama is hiring an offensive coordinator from the Pac-12 in Washington. How things have changed in college football.
Oh, goodness gracious. Tell the truth. But let's talk a little bit about the SEC Bowls. What other SEC teams are going everywhere? And we're going to go chronological order here, starting with the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl, Vanderbilt making its second straight bowl appearance ever in program history. They get to take on NC State, a team that their marquee win was against Florida State. Both these teams, I think, are fairly even. Each one has very small success, but they've had better than expected success this year. I think Vanderbilt's in for a good game against NC State. I mean, what do you think about this game? Do you think it might be closer than you think?
I think Vandy will win this game, and I think I'm going to predict this one kind of like I predicted the SEC championship game to go, which would be eventually Vandy will score a touchdown in the last, say, 5 or 10 minutes of say 5 minutes of the game, and pull it away to a bigger margin than it probably should be. But I think Vandy will eventually win this game by 10, 17 points, somewhere in that neighborhood. Being in Nashville helps the doors a lot also.
NC State's fired their head coach. They fired Tom O'Brien. Now Dana Bible's going to be leading that team as the interim coach. They face, James Franklin. He was an assistant at Maryland at one point. So NC State's faced James Franklin coached came James Franklin team before, so this is not totally out of the question. I think you're right. I think Vanderbilt will win this game. I think Vanderbilt's a solid team. I think they will win this game, but I don't think it'll be very much a blowout at all. I think NC State might give them a good run for their money. I mean, we see how they performed against Florida State. You never know. The Chick-fil-A Bowl. Number 8 LSU, number 14 Clemson. That's on the New Year's Eve in Atlanta. Two Tigers with 10 wins. LSU, they have one of the nation's best defenses. Clemson has very much a high powered offense. This is going to be more of a battle of LSU's defense versus Clemson's offense. See who's going to win out more and who's going to tire out first.
That's exactly what it is. I think it'll be Clemson's offense versus LSU's defense. But eventually, I think LSU's offense will get it the win over Clemson's defense just because Clemson hasn't faced a downhill, we're going to beat you to death attack like LSU's that they're going to bring into this Chick-fil-A Bowl. And I think eventually they're just going to run that quirky little straight backwards toss right up the middle so many times that eventually they're going to pound a way through. LSU's going to put up probably 30 or more just pounding the ball on Clemson's defense and find a way to win, I think.
I think so. I don't know. Clemson's been, even with a 10-win season, I haven't been thoroughly impressed by them. There hasn't been, a moment where I say, hey, look, there's Clemson, and they're a pretty solid team. There hasn't been really that moment in the season. 10-win season aside, which is not bad for a Clemson team, especially Dabo Sweeney coach team. That all credit aside, I think LSU, the Mad Hatter, as dominating as LSU has played this year, with the exception of Townsend, I have to keep bringing that up this year, but I think LSU will win this game against Clemson. I think it's a pretty outright victory. I think it might be another blowout in the Chick-fil-A Bowl this year. Moving on to New Year's Day, one of the early games being played, Northwestern, number 20 Northwestern, facing off with Mississippi State. And Miss State, they faltered at the end of the season. Northwestern they're still looking for their first bowl win since the Rose Bowl in 1949. I mean, you're talking what? Trying to guess my math here real quick. It's roughly 63 years ago. So, it's, I mean, you've got a Mississippi State squad. They dropped four of their final five games after going undefeated until they faced Alabama. And very disciplined football by these both teams. Mississippi State ranks fifth, and Northwestern ranks 10th nationally in turnover margin. So, another Big Ten SEC game. Northwestern is not a bad team. They're ranked number 20 in the BCS standings. Could be a challenge for Miss State, I think.
I think this is maybe the one bowl game that the SEC will lose this season. I think Northwestern will win this game because look at how Mississippi State has struggled with spread offenses this season. Alabama threw the ball a little more on Mississippi State than they had up to that point in the season. Texas A&M could have put 200 points on Mississippi State if they had enough time. And Ole Miss runs that spread offense, and they upset Mississippi State in a big way. Northwestern has been running that spread offense for 5 or 6 years now. They're very versatile. They've got guys on their team that can play quarterback, running back, and wide receiver, and more than one of them. That versatility is going to be too much for Mississippi State's defense, I think. I see a high-scoring affair, but I think Northwestern will win this game, very much like the game Northwestern won against Syracuse in the Carrier Dome, winning that game 52-51 or 46-45 or something of that nature. I don't know if it's going to be that extensive, but I could see something going that high.
Northwestern's faced 9 straight postseason defeats. I don't see them losing this game, honestly, though. This is their game to lose right now for Northwestern. 1949 was a long time ago, 63 years. I think that streak gets broken this year. They beat Mississippi State in the Gator Bowl. Moving on to the Outback Bowl in Tampa, Florida, the second of the three games that's being played in Tampa, Florida, the same exact time as every other SEC team. Number 10 South Carolina, number 18 Michigan. A lot of people thought Michigan was going to be heading to the Capital One Bowl, but that apparently did not pan out. South Carolina, though, coming in third place in the SEC East, still very solid season for South Carolina. Probably one of their best since they've actually, one of their good seasons since they joined the SEC back in 1992. This team's just getting better and better as they've recruited better. Steve Spurrier, he was on the cusp of leaving what 3 or 4 years ago, and now he's he's high praised, and now he's not looking like he's going to be leaving. But South Carolina and Michigan cutting their losses this year. I think this year that this was supposed to be their national championship year. Didn't pan out for them this year, though, and they get to go to the Outback Bowl in Tampa. But a pretty interesting game. Two very different systems facing off with each other.
It should be fun. I'm interested to see how South Carolina's offense performs now that they have a month to overcome the loss of Marcus Lattimore. From the time they lost Marcus Lattimore until now, I think they've been so wrapped up with getting the team prepared week in, week out for the upcoming opponent that they haven't really had a chance to experiment with some things and maybe make up for those yards, whether they be on the air or through the air or on the ground. I think this will be the time where you could see some very drastic improvements in South Carolina's offense in this bowl game. Very well could happen.
I think this is going to be a fun game. I've got Michigan, though, honestly, because that I think you've got sort of the emotional standpoint. Denard Robinson, it's his home state. It's his final game. There's going to be a lot of his family there. He's going to be emotionally very well prepared. Michigan is wanting to get, some compensation for this game. And I think that's where they've got the edge. South Carolina, yeah, they've played very well this season, but I think Michigan wants it more. That's where I think the difference is. I think that might be the second loss, and that might be the only two losses in the SEC this game. I'll just put it out there. That's the worst they could
do in this season, the bowl season, is 7-2, based on what we're looking at in the bowl season. I think that's a true. Georgia and Nebraska, Georgia coming into this game, disappointed by the fact they are not playing in a BCS game. Nebraska, they should be playing in a BCS game, but they just collapsed against Wisconsin in their title game. And, you know, two teams, this is with very disappointing results in their league championship games. Georgia, closer result than Nebraska. I think Georgia has a major edge coming into this one, definitely because they're angry about that one loss, and, you know, they need to prove themselves to the nation that they're not a team that, you know, that doesn't lie down after 5 yards short of being in the national championship game.
I think we all saw what Georgia's pass rush can do when they played Alabama in the SEC championship game. The SEC East has had a lot of attention thrown towards South Carolina's pass rush. Well, you know what? Georgia's got a pretty good one of their own with the two Jenkins and the Jarvis Jones, obviously. I think they're going to ruin Taylor Martinez's day and potentially his offseason with this. When this could be another blowout similar to what Alabama did to Michigan State after they lost in the SEC, after they lost so much, I mean, in the 2010 season. You could very well see something of that caliber.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fun game to watch, though, because I loved how Georgia performed in that game. I might watch that game just solely for the purpose of watching Georgia work, because they performed so great in that SEC championship game. I want to see them again. The All-State Sugar Bowl, number 3 Florida versus number 21 Louisville. We briefly touched on it. You talk about the old Muschamp. You got to give him credit where credit's due. He's won he's had 4 wins this season over teams that are in the BCS top 12. That's a pretty solid season for Will Muschamp. And here comes Louisville. Big East champion, wins over Rutgers 20-17 to secure the championship. Their losses are to Connecticut and Syracuse. I think it's pretty clear where the edge lies in this game. Florida's got a major, major edge coming into this game. Will Muschamp is going to be prepared, and this team's going to be prepared. I don't sense much of a fallout in this one. What do you think?
I see Mike Gillisley running the ball for 743 yards, 9 touchdowns, and probably catching a touchdown pass or two.
Smith style, right?
Yeah, probably catching a touchdown pass or two just for kicks.
Just for good measure.
You know, just for fun, really. It might even play a little defense, too, because who else is going to play defense, right? But really, Louisville, you've got no legitimate spot in the All-State Sugar Bowl. Especially against a team as good as Florida. This is a free win for the SEC in my book.
I agree. Florida's too good. Will Muschamp's going to be too prepared, and this team is too talented to let a team like Louisville go by the wayside. Again, I am extremely disappointed in Louisville. Losing week 13, the week before you had a top 25 matchup that could have kept NIU out of the BCS, and you fail. And that's just honestly ridiculous. And that's unacceptable. When you do something like that, Florida is going to pound you into the ground. That's how it's going to work. The AT&T Cotton Bowl, honestly, when I heard this matchup, I was just a bit slight disappointed. Texas A&M, okay, yeah, they deserve to be in the Cotton Bowl. But you got Oklahoma. I kind of wish they would have picked Texas, honestly. There's a huge, huge storyline because, you know, you're renewing the rivalry, essentially, in the AT&T Cotton Bowl in Texas, in Arlington. I mean, that's a big thing. But they pick up Oklahoma. But this could be still one of the more entertaining bowl games, an old-fashioned Big 12 shootout in one of the biggest stages in the country, Jerry Jones. And that's – it's going to be still a huge game out of the way. Still, I'm just a bit slight disappointed they didn't pick Texas.
I didn't think about that. That would have been a fun angle. But when this game comes down to finally being played on January 4th, I'm seeing points on points on points on points on points. So many points. Johnny Manziel, although the Heisman will already be decided by the time this game is being played, he can either justify getting the Heisman, which I personally think he will, or He can make his case for should have getting the Heisman. Either way, I think this is going to be one of the more fun January bowl games being played.
I think so, too. This is going to be a fun game, and I love how ESPN describes it in their bowl overview online. The electric bill better be paid in full because both teams are going to be are averaging 40 points a game. I mean, that's good. It's going to be a high offense game. And, you know, people in the SEC say, oh, if it's, there's no defense, then it's not a good game. But you're talking about stuff like the Alamo Bowl last year. That was a fun game. Big shootout between with Baylor winning that game. And I think this is going to be a fun game. But still, as I said before, I'm just a little disappointed. Could have been Texas. Could have been a fun game. Instead, we got a pretty good game. I'll take that. The BBVA Compass Bowl in Birmingham, Alabama, in Legion Field. Ole Miss, you got to give them credit. They're going back to a bowl game. This is huge for them. They've already sold 9,100 tickets out of this one. It's bound to be a whole lot of Ole Miss fans because it's essentially not far from Oxford, of course. Pittsburgh, they're going to their second straight BBVA Compass Bowl after facing SMU last year. And this is a kind of an interesting matchup, I think. I think Ole Miss, you know, we'll see how they come to their first bowl game. It'll be first bowl game under Hugh Freeze even. And Pitt, they're kind of coming in limping. They did win their final game of the season to get bowl eligible. But, I mean, this game could be close, I think. Who knows? Pittsburgh has been a team known to sometimes show up. Sometimes.
I don't see Pitt being able to stop Ole Miss's offense. And I think the thing I'm more interested to see in this game is noting Pitt's recent history, how many head coaches they have in between the recording of this podcast and this game.
They'll probably fire him before the game.
Well, especially with the coaching carousel spinning at about 1,000 miles an hour this week. Who knows what's going to happen at Pittsburgh, since apparently Pittsburgh is like the nerdy kid in the lunchroom. Everyone steals from Pittsburgh. Everybody knows he's got the lunch money, so they're stealing from Pittsburgh. Who knows what's going to happen at Pittsburgh in between now and this bowl game. I would not be surprised if Dane Chris has already packed up his bags and gone elsewhere.
I don't know. I still think this might be a closer game than people think, honestly, because – I mean, I know it's Ole Miss' first bowl, and they're going to get really excited and emotionally pumped. But, you know, Pittsburgh, A, they played well against SMU that one year, and that was the last year, and it was a pretty good game. I personally attended that game. It was a fun game, despite the, bone-crunching injury that happened on the SMU player last year. But a fun game, and I think this is going to be good. Let's talk about a couple of other notable bowls. Do you see any other game out there in the bowl schedule, you know, is there anything that attracts you at all that seems like it's going to have potential to be a very fun game? Anything out there?
Georgia Tech USC. I think that's going to be a fun game. That's in the Hyundai Sun Bowl. I think that's going to be fun because we know Lane Kiffin is one of the most gimmicky coaches college football has to offer, and gimmicks tend to not work when you're playing against a triple option offense at Georgia Tech is going to bring in. Plus, there's the fact that Georgia Tech probably shouldn't even be in this game since they are 6-7 after losing the ACC conference championship game. So there's that debate surrounding the bowl, and then the fact that USC has just been disappointing, to say the least. Who knows? Maybe USC could cap a disappointing year with a disappointing loss to a team that is coming into a bowl game with a losing record. That doesn't happen very often. Could you imagine the Los Angeles media if USC lost to Georgia Tech in the Sun Bowl?
Oh, yeah, that could be bad. That could be really bad. I didn't think about that.
And especially since Monty Kiffin has resigned.
Oh.
To take on tasks in the National Football League, we're told. New defensive staff on the way to Los Angeles, and they get to face one of the toughest offenses in football to stop, in my opinion. It's going to be fun. I can't wait.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be a fun game to watch. A lot of fireworks I'm expecting in that game. The game I'm watching, a couple games first. I'll start out with the Valero Alamo Bowl between Oregon State and Texas. Oregon State, you know, this team has been pretty solid this year. They've been pretty consistent. You know, they've lost the games they're supposed to lose.
and they've won the games they're supposed to win. And that's you know, that's a sign of a good team. And then you're coming in and you're facing against Texas. And as much as I want to see Texas in the Cotton Bowl, this is not a bad matchup at all for Texas and Oregon State being played in San Antonio. A lot of good bowl games, by the way, in general, in Texas. But Oregon State coming in the Pac-12, you know, they didn't get to start their season with everybody else with the Hurricane to start out the season. Yet they come out and they have a really solid season, you know. But Texas, you know, they were started out 4-0. They lose 42 points against Oklahoma, and then suddenly they're just the meh team of it saying. So it would be interesting to see if Oregon State can step up and play and beat this game, you know, instead of being the we win the games we're supposed to win, we lose the game we're supposed to lose. Let's win this game where we might be at an underdog in this game. I think this is going to be a fun game to watch. Another game I'm watching also, the inaugural Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl in Tempe between Michigan State and TCU. TCU, their first year in the Big 12, coming into this season. But Michigan State, they've had a meh season in the Big 10 as well. I'm surprised they're even bowl eligible in this one. But you talk about TCU, a team that, you know, last year was really good. Then they entered the Big 10, the Big 12, and they're suddenly a different team. Michigan State, last year, they were a pretty solid team. This year, very disappointing. Two very disappointing teams. I kind of like those matchups because they just goes to see who's the best of the worst in this kind of state. But that's kind of what I look at. So a lot of good games out there in bowl season. Personally enjoy bowl season outright because it's my favorite time of the year. You get these games that you don't see very often. But anyways, the BCS National Championship game is going to be played on January 7th between Alabama and Notre Dame. It will be on at 7 o'clock. It will be on ESPN, and a fun game that's going to be for Alabama and Notre Dame. It's going to be quite a game to watch. We're going to take a brief hiatus for this winter holidays. We'll come back to you for a week at least to talk about the BCS National Championship game and recap that for you, and we'll start to look into the little off season as we go. But we appreciate you listening to us at least this season and this year. Happy holidays to you and yours, and we will see you next week. Roll Tide and beat Notre Dame.